Okay, so when we live together, you know, we really need to help each other out and create a good environment. And so one way the Buddha recommends doing that is through ethical restraint and through developing kindness and compassion. And so he talked about the five precepts as a way to create a good environment when people are living together. So I think most of you have taken the five precepts. There's somebody who hasn't taken the five precepts? Yeah, okay. So anyway, we'll all live according to them while we're here. Yeah, so just to review, because this really, when you think about it, it's a structure that helps people get along together. Okay, so the first thing is not to kill, so certainly not each other. But, you know, my mother used to say, I could kill you, you know, but I didn't think she was serious. although sometimes. But, you know, it actually means not to physically harm anybody, okay? And so that it's not only each other, but also the animals and the insects. And so to really pay attention to all the various living beings we have here. Even though it's winter, you'll find spiders and all sorts of other little guys that we share the place with. So taking, you know, care of them, not harming them physically. And in doing so, then everybody here knows that they're safe, that they don't need to worry about any kind of physical assault. And that creates an incredible ambience of safety and trust, doesn't it? And then the second precept is to avoid taking what hasn't been given to us, freely given to us. The word freely is important. In other words, we could coerce somebody into giving us something, but that's still included under this precept of stealing. Okay? So, you know, if we keep this one very well, then again, everybody feels very safe. We can leave our things somewhere. We know somebody's not going to steal them. They may clean up after us, and we may not be able to find it because somebody else did that. But then that's not the doing of the other person. That is our own doing. If we clean up after ourselves, you know, we'll know where our things are. So here in the Abbey, there's certain things that, you know, are for public use. You know, the things in the bathroom that are out on the sink and so on, you know, then those can be used by the public, except toothbrushes, but you know, soap and whatever in the shower and so on, hand lotion if it's out. But things that are in the drawers, don't go rummaging through the drawers looking for things unless you talk to one of the residents, because certain things may belong to individuals and certain things are for community use. The first aid kit is open to everybody anytime, don't worry about that. Brooms, any things for cleaning are open for everybody to use. But again, you know, don't go into the office and go into any of the drawers or filing cabinets or, you know, anything that's put away, because that's stuff that hasn't been freely offered. So it's things, you know, we need to kind of take care of this. You know, if we're too fundamentalist about this, it becomes difficult to keep silence, because, you know, can I use the soap to wash my hands, or can I use this pencil? You know, if you think that it's something that somebody would naturally say okay for you to use, then use it, you know, whether it belongs to the community or each other. But if you remove it from its location, like if you borrow somebody's pencil, you know, write and let them know where it is, so they, you know, they're not wondering. Yeah. And so regarding the books, I think We asked you all to bring books that you wanted to read, but we do have a library downstairs and a library in Gotami where you're welcome to read the books. But please don't take any of the books out of the big library up here, because we've lost too many of them. Okay? So, you know, taking care of the precept on how we relate to goods and property and possessions. Okay? And then the third one is to avoid unwise or unkind sexual behavior. Here in the context of the retreat, we're avoiding all sexual behavior. First of all, you know, you're at a monastery, you're not at a retreat center. You're not at a person's home. You're at a monastery where celibacy is the way we live. So, you know, please remember that. And then also, by not having any sexual conduct, we can let go of a lot of the trips that we go on in order to attract people. You know, like, well, let's see, he's over here, I can walk, so is he noticing me when I walk across the meditation hall? You know, and we get very self-conscious about ourselves and how are we going to attract somebody and how are they going to look at us, and, you know, and then, of course, we have to, you know, wear ornaments and jewelry and, you know, take care of our hair and wear makeup and all these kinds of things to attract somebody. And here we're not trying to do any kind of romantic attraction. So anything that has to do with adorning the body or perfuming the body or anything like that, we don't need to waste our time doing. Okay? It's really quite freeing. Yeah, you don't have to worry about, you know, somebody looking at me. You know, why aren't they looking at me? You know, are they paying attention to Vajrasattva, not me? So you can just forget about all of that. Okay? Then the fourth precept is to avoid lying. And so saying things that we know are not true. Yeah. And this can, we get in all sorts of little white lies. You know the little white lies? How we just subtly turn something because actually it's for the benefit of the other person. Check again, okay? Whenever we're, you know, knowingly distorting the truth, is it really for the other person's benefit? Or is it mostly that we don't want them to think something bad of us, and we're afraid if they know something that we did or something that we were thinking, that then they would think poorly of us? Yeah. Or sometimes we're afraid just to be honest. Yeah. And to say what is, oh, what are they going to think about me? So we do all these things to make ourselves look good and cover up certain things that we think somebody else may judge us for. But that creates a lot of tension in our own mind, doesn't it? And it's better just to be truthful. And I think if we did something, we should be able to say we did it. And if we don't want to say we did it, then we have to check up, why did we do it? Do you get what I mean? You know, because usually when we look at lying, there's an action that we did that we don't want other people to know, you know, that we don't feel so good about. And then there's the lying to cover it up. So you kind of have a double thing there. Yeah, the initial action was, which wasn't so good, and the lie that covers it up. Yeah. And sometimes what happens is the lying becomes much more of a problem than the initial action. Ask Bill Clinton. Yeah? I mean, his whole thing with Monica wasn't great, but what was it that got people really upset? Was his lying, wasn't it? Yeah? And so lying is really problematic, because you have to remember what you told each person the last time you talked to them. And sometimes we forget. Yeah. And sometimes we have a certain expression when we're lying. There's certain times I can tell when somebody's lying. You know, I don't always say something to them, but I know it's baloney. Yeah. One time here at the Abbey, I said something to somebody because I knew he was lying, and he maintained that he wasn't, and then half an hour later he came over and he said, well, actually I thought about it, and it was more the way you described it. But he knew it good and well before, you know, he just didn't want to admit it to me. Lying gets confusing, and also lying breaks trust. Yeah, because when we can't trust somebody else's word, what can we trust about them? You know, really, what can we trust if we can't trust their word? What about them can we trust? Yeah, so it becomes really quite difficult. So to tell each other the truth. Yeah, and also I think it's important that we tell ourselves the truth, because sometimes our self-talk is a bunch of lies. Okay. Now, sure, sometimes our self-talk is lying in the sense that we rationalize or justify our negative deeds. That's one way we lie to each other, to ourselves. But another way we lie to ourselves is by telling ourselves that we're so bad and incapable and not worthwhile and incompetent and hopeless and helpless and a failure. Okay, so all this kind of negative self-talk that goes on in our mind so often, it's basically not the truth, is it? You know, is it the truth? I am a failure. Is it true? Nobody loves me. Is that true? Oh, yeah. But if you think somebody loves all of us, it's not true that nobody loves me. Yeah, I can't do anything right. Is that true? Okay. So look, you know, when you start becoming aware of the self-talk, question the things that you tell yourself and ask yourself if they're really true. And sometimes when you have judgments or opinions about other people, also question yourself, is that true? Because you'll find that even though we keep silence, we'll get to know each other quite well. But in the process of knowing each other, sometimes we project all sorts of junk on other people. It's like, that person, you know, looked at the, you know, didn't put the spoon for the cabbage in my hand. That means that, you know, they're trying to, you know, they don't respect me and blah, 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 blah. Or that person knew that I was on dishes and I had to go to the bathroom and they didn't step in and help me and they're doing it deliberately, you know, because they're mean and cruel. And our mind goes off on all these amazing trips sometimes, imputing motivations on other people. You know, I just know so-and-so in the meditation hall hates me. Well, how do I know that? Well, because, you know, they didn't sit next to me when we set out our seats, or they, you know, didn't smile at me when they sat down for this session. Or, you know, we have all these kinds of reasons, and we make up all these stories that have nothing to do with reality. Okay? You'll see a lot of these during the retreat, you know, in your own mind, not in other people's minds, in your own mind. Okay? But, you know, so it's a real trick to be able to identify these and say they're not true, you know, and let go of some of these opinions and judgments and this very harsh self-talk. Okay? And then the last precept is to avoid taking intoxicants. So that means alcohol and illegal drugs and abusing prescription drugs. If you have prescription drugs, you know, please use them according to your doctor's prescription. Don't decide this is a place to go off of them, you know, without telling anybody. That's not too wise. But also don't take more than what your prescription is. Did you know that more people die in this country from abusing prescription drugs than from illegal drugs? Yeah? Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So that's included in this precept. Now, in the kind of framework, you know, that we've set out here, we are actually separating ourselves from a lot of other drugs or a lot of other intoxicants, okay? There's no TV. You can't go online. You can't use your cell phone. You can't text. You know, I was reading an article that, you know, somebody was saying that texting and cell phone use is addictive, you know? And you can see that it is. It's like, you know, I got to check my cell phone right away. I got to check my computer. People just feel so weird without their cell phone. I mean, every time now you go somewhere, you sit down, somebody puts their cell phone right in front of them. You know, you've made an appointment to talk with them, and they take out their cell phone so that they can talk to other people. You know? And you take out your cell phone so you can talk to other people. And you don't spend very much time together because your phones are... But neither one of you can put the phone down and put it away because something really interesting might come. How many really interesting messages do you get? Think about it. You know? How many do you really get that are tantalizing? It's the hope that we'll get one. Yeah. Okay. But they don't come so often. So, you know, we're trying to detach ourselves from all these other objects that we take refuge in, that we use for distraction. Yeah? So please do not go on the internet. Yeah? It's really will disrupt your retreat and disrupt the retreat of everybody else here. There's some of the Abbey monastics that have reason to go on the internet because they need to keep this place running. But even them, no surfing the internet, no checking your personal email, just Abbey things, okay? And, you know, no TV, this, that, and the other thing, okay? So we can really focus on our practice. You might go through some withdrawal symptoms, you know. Oh, the messages are building up on my cell phone. It'll go over the top, and then nobody will be able to leave me a message. And I'm sure it's a message for the perfect job that I always want that somebody's going to call. So I really have to check my cell phone messages and delete all the useless ones so that the other ones can come through. Right? Well, a few years ago, we had one person who was here who cheated, and she went and listened to her cell phone messages. Completely threw her whole retreat off, you know? What was it? I can't remember it so well. Maybe it was the married man she was having an affair with decided to cut off the relationship while she was in retreat. So she learned about this through cheating and getting her cell phone messages. But you see, interesting thing, she was doing something that she shouldn't be doing. And then this happened in retreat, and then, you know, she kind of went bananas. Okay, so living with the five precepts really creates a good container so that all of us can focus on the Dharma. Because it's very, very hard to find a place in this world where you have a good environment where you can just practice without having to worry about other things. Yeah, I mean, think of where else you could go. So, you know, we're creating a special environment here, and we all came here for that special environment. So let's all contribute to keeping the environment the one that we all came here to be in, and not letting our distracting mind or our mind of attachment go all over the place. Okay? So we'll keep silence in the retreat Silence means no useless talk, okay? There will, when we're doing the NVC at the end of it, if there you want to have a little discussion, that's okay, but immediately afterwards there's silence, okay? So, and there will be talking when we have a community meeting, when we have Q&A sessions, yeah? But to really avoid the chit-chat that we so often have. You know, you'll laugh, and that's fine. And sometimes the whole room will laugh, and that's okay too. Yeah, but we don't want to start chit-chatting. Also because when we talk, we create an identity. Here is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I like. This is what I don't like. This is what I want, what I don't want. We create a whole identity. And in our Buddhist practice, what we're trying to do is realize how constructed that identity is and that it isn't who we are. And that all these false identities we've created for ourselves are actually false identities. But, you know, when we talk to other people, we create these identities in telling people all about ourselves. And then we judge and evaluate other people according to what they tell us about themselves. Yeah. But here, none of that really matters. What kind of job you have, how much money you make or don't make, you know, it doesn't matter. Nobody really cares. Yeah, we're all here for the purpose of practicing the Dharma, transforming our mind. Okay, so the five precepts really create a good container that help us to do what we came here to do. Something else that's very important as we do retreat together is being compassionate to each other. Yeah, and compassionate towards ourselves. Like I said, this very harsh self-talk we often engage in is not very compassionate. No, we really have to release it. When you're doing purification practice, you'll see all your boo-boos in life, you know. And you'll see your most horrible boo-boos. Yeah. But we have to give ourselves some real compassion and, you know, some kindness to the person who did those things. You know, and practice some self-forgiveness instead of self-flagellation. Because we have this very weird Judaic Christian idea that the more we feel guilty and beat up on ourselves mentally and physically, the more we are atoning for our wrongs. Yeah. So that's exactly one of these thoughts that we have to ask. Is that true? Yeah. Does feeling guilty and hating myself because of what I did atone for what I did? No, it doesn't. Doesn't do anything. Yeah. So actually, when you're doing the Vajrasattva practice, what is helping you to purify is the blissful light from Vajrasattva. Can you imagine blissful light from Vajrasattva, who has kindness and who loves you, is what purifies you. Not, you're evil, you're going to hell. That's not purifying us. Yeah? Hit a few buttons there, huh? Yeah? So it's really the opposite, you know? It's we let the bliss and the compassion and the acceptance purify us. Okay? So we need kindness and compassion for ourselves. You know, we also need it for each other. Yeah? Because some, you know, people do what people do. Yeah? But what we try to do is act out our compassion in just even the small things that we do together. So, for example, coming on time to sessions is being compassionate to everybody else in the retreat. Keeping the five precepts is being compassionate to everybody else in the retreat. Yeah. If you see that there's a job that needs to be done and nobody's doing it, maybe somebody's sick, maybe they forgot, step in and do it. Show your compassion. Okay? Because we can so easily stand there and go, oh, this person is always on lunch cleanup and they never come until 20 minutes after we've all started and then they show up. You know? And you can spend a whole meditation session on this person, you know, who is so inconsiderate and doesn't do their dishes. In fact, you could spend 2 or 3 meditation sessions. You know, well, should I tell the retreat leader? Maybe, well, no, maybe that won't work. Maybe I should write them a note. Well, where do I put the note? Because I'm not supposed to put the note on their puja table. I'm not supposed to put the note where they sit on the dining room table. That means I have to pass the note to them when they're walking by, but somebody else might see me do that. And what should I write in the note? Let's see. NVC says, when you click your mala with a loud sound, I feel hatred! Because I need peace, you know. And you spend a whole meditation session, you know, planning these things out. And so sometimes it's just better, just have some compassion for the person, you know? Just have some compassion. You might sit and click your mala loudly, deliberately, to give them some of their own medicine, but you probably won't concentrate during that session either. Okay? So, you know, have some compassion for each other, for ourselves. But show our compassion by, you know, trying to be where we're supposed to be, you know, when it's the time to be there. And if we can't, if we're ill, then to let somebody know. Okay? Yeah? If you get lost in the forest, somebody did a few retreats ago, please let us know in advance that you're going to get lost. Please get lost in the morning so we don't have to go out there at night when it's freezing and dark to try and find you. And please take us the first aid kit with you. Okay, so please pre-plan getting lost. If you're not sure where you're going in the forest, please don't go there. Okay? Just go up the hill and retrace your steps and come down, or go out that way and come right back. Okay? Because we had somebody, did you tell them about this?
I didn't go anywhere
else. Oh, yeah, so she got lost. It was in the afternoon session. We had to call the police plus the fire department. The police wanted to know what color eyes she had, and we couldn't remember exactly. And they wanted to know her social security, you know. And they wouldn't go look for her until they had that information. So we called the fire department, and, you know, because they have to do a missing persons thing. You know, she's freezing out there, but they have to do a missing person. So we called the fire department, and they all came out here with some, a couple of the... yeah, the snowmobiles, you know, and going around here and there. There was like a whole team of people out looking for somebody. Yeah. And finally they found her and brought her back here, and she was okay, and we were all quite relieved. But we were already, you know, let's see, she has 2 daughters. Do we call the daughters now? Do we call them later? Yeah. Yeah, so please, if you don't know where you're going, don't go there. Yeah. Yeah. What else? Okay. Be mindful. Mindfulness is another theme of the retreat. So here, what we're being mindful of, what we're holding in mind, is our precepts. Yeah. Is the meditation practice we're doing. So bringing our meditation practice with us into the break time. Yeah, if you're meditating on Vajrasattva, you don't leave Vajrasattva in your meditation hall. You take him with you. You know, he's in your heart or on your head or in front of you. Yeah, so that you maintain your mindfulness of Vajrasattva. Okay, same thing if you're doing succession. You maintain that mindfulness. What else? Yeah, there's a session to study, and it's very helpful to study, to read, or to listen to Dharma talks, or to watch videos, Dharma videos, during retreat, because when you learn something, then that will inform your meditation. It'll help you understand how to meditate, and it'll give you something to think about and to meditate on during the meditation session. So we had different books we recommended for you to read. We'll also, one afternoon a week, be showing the video of some talks that Venerable Tenzin Khatri and I gave last year at Vajrapani Institute about the Vajrasattva practice. I really recommend to people that they also, whatever retreat you're doing, to read Kenzo Jumpa Tekchuk's book, Transforming Adversity into Joy and Courage, because especially in it, he talks about all sorts of different thought training techniques, how to transform different situations into the path. And as things from our past come up that we have to make peace with, it's very helpful to know how to think about these things in a different way. We also have quite a number of thought transformation books in the library, 7-Point Thought Transformation, Advice to a Spiritual Friend, Mind Training like Rays of the Sun, Wheel of Sharp Weapons, there's a lot of them. Transforming Problems, Oprah Rinpoche's book, Transforming Problems, is really quite good. Door to Satisfaction. Yeah, so all these kinds of things are very helpful to teach you how to work with your mind, you know. So really when you're meditating and different thoughts and memories and different things come up, yeah, remember the teachings that you've heard and apply them to that situation. Yeah. So it's not that you hear teachings over here and forget them and meditation is over here, but you know, you try and learn things from the teachings and then apply them in your meditation so you know the counterforces or the antidotes to disturbing mental states. Okay? Try not to have a lot of expectations. We always say that, but of course we all have expectations. But try not to, okay? And also, don't judge your meditation sessions. Just do them. Yeah. Don't, and also, very important, don't compare yourself to anybody else. Because, you know, at some time or another, you know, we all sit there, and it's like, oh, I am so restless. My mind's completely crazy. How's everybody else doing? Oh, they're all in samadhi. I can't do it. I got to move my knees. I got to move my back. And this hurts and that hurts. And I want to get up. But then if I get up and go out, I can't count the mantra for that session. You know, why is it only me who has trouble and can't meditate? Okay. Don't go there. Yeah. Because you know what? All those people who look like they're in samadhi, they have all the same rubbish going on in their mind. Yeah. So really, don't waste your time and energy comparing yourself to other people. Just do your practice. Yeah. Some sessions you'll have a lot of, you know, some insights. Some sessions you won't. But you know what? It's because of doing the practice and all the sessions that you don't have for insights that you finally get to one where you do. Okay? So don't just, you know, judge and criticize and compare. We're not in a contest with each other. We're just here to do the practice. And so I always recommend to people just focus on creating the cause. Don't worry about the result. Yeah, create the cause. How do we do that? Keeping good ethical conduct. Developing love and compassion. Yeah, reflecting on selflessness. Reflecting on the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Just do your practice. don't worry about, you know, when is something going to happen and this, that, and the other thing. Okay? And definitely don't compare yourself to other people. I remember that, well, a few retreats ago, we had one person who was like having all these dreams. She was sure that Tara was giving her initiation in her dreams. And, you know, but okay, that's nice, but so? So? Yeah. The real question is, are you becoming a kinder, wiser person? Not are you having flashing lights and Tara appearing to you and wild dreams and, you know, are you becoming a kinder, wiser person? Yeah. So don't, you know, don't worry about all the different things. When I did Vajrasattva, the man sitting across to me, he was about 30 years older than I was. He was having these kundalini experiences with bliss going up and down his spine and, you know, like all over the place. he was blissed out. And it was like, okay, that's good. Glad you're having that. But, you know, I'm sitting here trying to figure out why I'm still mad at my second grade teacher. Because she didn't let me be in the class play. Yeah. So, you know, just do your practice. When you have a nice experience, that's good. Use it to say, oh, I know that those kinds of things are possible. That's really good. But don't grab onto it and say, okay, I've got to recreate it in my next session. Because the moment you do that, you're sunk. You know, we can never create a past experience, can we? Never. Yeah, so don't try to. Because it'll only wear you out. Just do your practice. Okay, so I was saying study or listen to things, whatever. Also, make sure you get some exercise in the break time. I say this every year. Everybody nods, and then they don't do it. And then at the end of the retreat, you know, after they're tense, then they come and say, you know, you were really right. I should have gotten more exercise. Okay, so I told you so. Already. But, you know, really try and get some exercise. You know, walk down the hill and walk up the hill every day. Do some stretching or yoga or tai chi or something like that. Okay? Walk up and down the stairs. Walk up the hill and down the hill. Yeah? Get some exercise. Use your body. Also, you know what's very nice to do because we have the Buddha statue in the middle of the garden, circumambulate the Buddha statue. Yeah? Just circumambulate, get some exercise walking. You know, you're creating some virtue going around the Buddha statue. Look at the various sentient beings around you and wish them well. Yeah? So use your body. Yeah? And so in that way, doing the various chores, keeping things clean and stuff like that, it's a way of getting some exercise and also, you know, showing our kindness for the other people who are around us. And it's also a way that we bring our practice into that activity. Whenever you're cleaning, you can think that you're cleaning the defilements of sentient beings with the wisdom realizing emptiness. Okay? So there's all these little gathas. You can ask Dani. She's the gatha expert. Yeah? And she can give you something to read, right, about it or to listen to. But you make up these little sayings for the different activities that you're doing so that you make them part of your practice. Okay. Another thing is don't squeeze yourself when you're doing a visualization. You know, sometimes we visualize Vajrasattva, visualize Vajradhara. You know, when your mind gets like that, you're just going to get like your internal wind energies are just going to get out of focus. Yeah. So just remember that visualize means imagine. It means see with your mind's eye. It doesn't mean try and see it with your eyes. Yeah, when we're visualized, we're not trying to see things with the same way we see them with our eyes. But if I say, think of the place you live, think of your room. Do you have an image in your head what your room looks like? Yeah, you're doing that even though your eyes are open. You still have an image in your mind about what your room looks like. That's visualization. Okay. You know where the bed is, where the table is, you know, where the window is. Yeah? So you don't have to go like this and try and see it. You just know it's there. So if you're visualizing Vajrasattva, Vajradhara, you know, you want to get the feeling of being in the presence of an enlightened being. Yeah? What would it be like to sit in the presence of an enlightened being? Yeah? So explore that a little bit. And feel like you're doing that. Feel like there's this connection between you and the deity. And, you know, don't get all hung up with, are the celestial silks dark blue or red? You know, and does he have celestial silks going this way and that way? And what kind of jewels are his jewel ornaments made out of? You know, yeah. Don't sweat the small stuff. Just get the feeling of what it's like to be in the presence of a Buddha. Okay? And so, you know, you can be aware of Vajrasattva on your head, but your main focus is on yourself being purified, you know, and light and nectar coming into your body. If you're focusing too much up here, you know, your winds get imbalanced. You're likely to get headaches and so forth. So really focus on, you know, Vajrasattva is there, you know, and in your mind's eye, you can see him and the hung and whatever. And you focus on this feeling of the light and nectar purifying, you know. Okay. Sometimes you may want to focus on the visualization more, sometimes on the mantra more. It's hard. Some people find it hard to do both at the same time. If you want to, you know, that's perfectly fine. Some sessions you may focus on the mantra and just really listen to the sound of the mantra. And you know the visualization is there, but your mind is, you know, really immersed in the sound of the mantra. Other sessions, you may really focus on, you know, the visualization of the light and nectar purifying. Yeah, and the mantra's going, it's in the background somewhere, but you're really focusing more on the visualization. Some sessions you may focus more just on the feeling of being purified. Yeah, so the visualization, the mantra are going, but, you know, to lesser degrees, but your main focus is, oh, I'm purified of this, I'm free of this. What does that feel like to set this down? Okay, so, you know, each session is going to be different and you'll find different ways to work with the sadhana. Also, be aware that you can do the sadhana very quickly and you can do it very slowly. Yeah. What I recommend is, at least for the people who are going to be here all 3 months who want to complete the 100,000 mantra, is the first thing in the morning, do the sadhana more slowly, yeah? And all the other sessions, do it more quickly, yeah? And focus more on the mantra. But sometimes when you're doing the sadhana, there might be one particular part that really reaches out and grabs you, and this can happen in the succession practice too. You know, one verse just really calls out to you. So focus on that verse in that session, that's fine. Yeah. In other words, every time you do the sadhana, you don't need to do it the same way, at the same speed, giving each verse the same proportion, you know. But change it. Sometimes do it faster or slower, or do one section faster, another section slower, Yeah. So play with these things. Yeah. Don't treat your sadhana as a recipe book that you've got to, you know, it said 1/2 teaspoon and I can't put, you know, 5/5 of a teaspoon because that'll ruin it. Don't, you know? On the other hand, don't go making up your own sadhana either. Okay. You know, stick with what's going on there. But, you know, you can play with it and do it different speeds and, you know, things like that. Okay, so those are some things I thought just to do. Is it like a way of introduction to the retreat? Please ask questions. Yeah. Before you do, I just want to remind you that what I said before, that what we're retreating from is ignorance, anger, and attachment. So just keep that in mind. That's what we're retreating from. Okay, now questions.
So last one.
Once you have it memorized, leave the book.
And do we have to memorize it word by word, or can that be?
Yeah.
Feature?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the descriptions, you don't have to know it word by word. There, you just need to know what to do, you know, or what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. When it comes to saying the different prayers, then try and maybe stick with what's there. Although sometimes you may find that you feel very inspired and you know what the meaning of the prayer is and you want to put it in your own words and say it in your own words, and that's fine.
And is that true for sixth session as well?
Pardon?
Is that true for sixth session as well?
Yeah. You know, when you get familiar with the visualization, you just visualize Dorje Chong there. Yeah. Okay.
Like in most of the books, it refers to like Bodhisattva and its consort. Does that really matter? So if you
Here we're doing the single Vajrasattva. Okay, you need an initiation into that particular version of Vajrasattva to do it with consort. So those of you who are reading Lama Yeshe's book, don't do that visualization. Okay. Unless, of course, you've had that particular initiation, but I don't think...
So that's also true for the Haruka, then?
Yeah, you don't visualize Haruka as your, for refuge. You visualize the Buddha surrounded by all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Okay? Yeah, so no consort, because, yeah, it just gets to be too confusing for people. Yeah. Well, that was the particular way that Lama had us do it in the old days. But the usual way in the Nindra practice is this way with the single one. Okay, other questions? Somebody said that the Vajrasattva people had questions this morning. This was your time.
Yeah, they were asking about the counting.
Oh, yeah, the counting. Oh, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4. How many do I have to do? How long is the session? It takes me approximately 23.5 seconds for each mantra. How many is that times 108? Oh, why couldn't they make it a nice even number? And how many seconds? And then I have to divide that by 60 seconds in a minute. And how long is this session? Oh, darn. I'm 5 mantras short. You know, I'm never going to finish. Okay? And you can spend a whole session or 2 or 10 on that. Okay? So what I recommend regarding counting is if you're not doing the 100,000, don't worry about counting. If you really want to do the 100,000, and it's a very good thing to be able to do that, yeah, then you have your mala. See if your mala has 108 or 111, you know, whatever it has, just know that. And what I do is I have two little bowls of beans, you know. And when I finish a mala, I move one bean from this bowl to that bowl. Okay? Yeah. Now, the trick is remembering which bowl you're removing. Left to right, or right to left. Or, you know? Or you sit down and you go, I'm sure I had more beans in that bowl. Somebody must have knocked it over, you know, in the break time, and they just kind of put it back. And you know? So, yeah, whatever. Okay?
So, I remember that I was talking about creating a certain space and not letting other people and other... What is that about?
Okay. So the physical limitations of the space, the Abbey property, and I would say down to the bottom of the road, you know, down to Spring Valley, you know. I think if somebody, if you know where you're going and wants to walk around Spring Valley to Elmer's Loop, that's okay. But then, you know, back. So, but I don't think many people are going to do that walk, probably just me. Yeah, so stay within that space. And so when we do the thing of setting the conditions and the environment, yes, tomorrow, we'll do that. We'll imagine that space that we're having. And then we really try and limit the people that come into this space. So, of course, we have all these kind people who are offering the groceries every week. Yeah, so of course we think of them coming into the space. You know, there might be a doctor or an ambulance, let's hope not. There's going to be Mike and Tony who are working on the hall. There might be a few extra people, you know, the delivery guy, you know, whatever, UPS guy. So we just think of them. But, you know, we do this because, again, it's limiting, you know, what our mind can get distracted to.
And can the counting continue, like for the ones that we're doing a month? Can we continue at home, like if we keep everything, can we continue that?
Yeah. Counting? Now, you're supposed to actually, technically speaking, do it on one seat. But, you know, here, if you're not here for the whole time, then, yeah, take it home. Don't have any break. You have to be doing it every single day to count without missing one day. Even if you're sick, you drag yourself into there and do at least one session. And then, so when you go home, then you just make your meditation seat and you stay with that one seat and then finish your counting.
And we don't need to make, like, the Torah mess and all that.
No, that's okay.
Well,
do the different offerings, you know, argam, padyam, and those things. Huh?
Like they're set up here with an incense.
Yeah.
Flowers, all that.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Counting recitations or whole malas?
You usually count whole malas. So, you know. There's such a strict way of counting that if we follow it exactly, we probably wouldn't get any mantras said. Yeah. So usually we count whole malas if you feel that your mind is getting under too much stress, then count half malas. Okay. But don't start counting, 22, 24, 26, 28 this time. No. Okay. I mean, it's much better. Try and stick with whole malas. This is because it's a long mantra. For those of you doing the guru yoga, then just count whole malas because you're just going to be saying a short mantra. Okay? Yeah. Okay? If you leave the session before it's over, you don't count the malas. Okay? Yeah?
I have more about the math. So if I'm staying for 3 months, does it mean 1,000 malas, whether it's 108 or 111?
No, it means you do 1,000 111,111. So if you have 111 on your mala, it makes it a little easier for counting. If you have 108, maybe you have to do a few extra mala, you know. So, yeah. Now, also, if you get really distracted, you don't count those malas. Not those malas, but you penalize yourself. You know, if you're really distracted, then you don't count however many mantra there were, you know. You go back.
So, trying to simplify it for this mind. So whatever that math will be, it will come out to then how many per month? How many per week?
No, forget it. Forget it. Forget it. You're going to drive yourself crazy. Just do the mantra. However many you do, you do. However long it takes you, it takes you. Yeah. Don't start figuring out how many you have to do each session, and the sessions are different lengths and this and that. You will drive yourself and everybody here crazy, guaranteed. Also, you say the mantra faster as you get into the retreat. It doesn't take you as long. So do not get hung up on the counting. Okay? Now, I know I'm saying it, and I'm saying it strongly, and I know you're going to ignore it. And somebody's going to come to me in the middle of retreat and say, you know, I have all these beans here, and I did this, but I was distracted. Do I count those mantra or not count those mantra? And this, and I've been counting the half mantra because you said we could, but actually I knew you didn't really mean it, because I don't. And so do I count those or not count those? But I'm never going to make this 111,000. Why do I have to do the extra 10% anyway? And, you know, I think my mala had 111, but then at the end I counted again. It was only 108, and I have to do all these more mantra. Oh, this is terrible. It's like paying income tax. You know? Please remember, your job is not to count mantra. Your job is to transform your mind. Write that in big letters. Okay, my job is to transform my mind. Counting the mantras is just one way so that you feel like you've done something. Yeah?
What if suddenly it gets too scary someplace in the mind?
Yeah, if it gets too scary someplace in your mind?
Or if I'm too scared to go somewhere.
Yeah. Then you just stop and you breathe and you relax and you give yourself some kindness and compassion. Yeah? And then if you want to talk to about it, you know, come see me, or, you know, ask if there's somebody in particular, you know, who's an Abbey resident who you'd like to talk to, then, you know, ask to speak to that person. Yeah? But also remember that it's only thoughts in our mind. Yeah? And thoughts don't have physical form. A thought isn't going to hurt us. It's just a thought. Yeah? So that helps us not be so reactive to some of the things. Yeah? On the other hand, just do what's comfortable for you. Yeah, don't push if you don't feel you should. Instead, come talk to somebody. Okay?
And once we're done with the counting, we finish it at home, do we don't need to do like the fire ceremony now?
Oh, it's good to do it if you can do it again.
Okay. So
but
you can,
if
like, see how it works here, and then
yeah,
recreate it at home.
Yeah. But make sure it's safe.
Okay.
Don't burn your house down.
How do we relate to Vajrasattva as being simultaneously the wisdom and compassion of all the Buddhas, but also like a being?
Mm-hmm. You can do it. You don't have to think of all these things at one time. Just think it's the wisdom and compassion of all beings, of all Buddhas, appearing in the form of Vajrasattva. That's all. You know, it's like how an artist has an internal feeling and they express it through a picture. So these qualities get expressed through the body language and color and so forth of Vajrasattva. That's all. You know, don't focus on Vajrasattva so much as a specific being. Focus more on just being the wisdom and compassion and all the incredible qualities of all the Buddhas.
Yeah,
our mind thinks of all sorts of distractions. You know, you're doing Vajrasattva mantra, and in the middle you realize you're all of a sudden doing the Longchen Rezi mantra instead. So then you go back on your mala, you know? Yeah. So, just keep your mind on Vajrasattva and keep with that. Okay. Don't spend too many sessions planning all the other retreats you're going to do after you finish this one. Okay? Yeah, many people, we get notes in the middle of a retreat. Oh, I'm enjoying this retreat so much, and so I'm thinking of coming next year to your 1 week Chenrezig retreat. What are the dates for it? We got a note like this one retreat. Yeah? Or, oh, this is really good. Let's see, where, you know, and you write a note, where can I do another 3-month retreat? I heard that such and such a center was really good. Do you recommend I go there? Please don't write us notes like this, okay? Just do your practice. Don't think about everything you're going to do later, and da 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 da. Just, you know, work with your mind right now. And also, don't get into the thing. Sometimes we're meditating and we're going, oh, I'm just sitting here and I'm so distracted. I'm not meditating at all. I should go out and do something to benefit sentient beings and really put my bodhicitta into practice. So I'm going to leave the retreat and I'm going to go start a nonprofit organization to help, you know, impoverished children who are living in the streets worldwide. You know, and then you leave your retreat and you go start your nonprofit, and then you're doing your nonprofit work and you're going, oh, I'm so busy doing all this work for sentient beings, but I'm not learning the Dharma, and it's really important for me to learn the Dharma. I've really got to get out of this work and running around and go do some study. So you turn your nonprofit over to somebody else. You enroll in some Buddhist college or some study program. You're doing that. Then when you're studying, you're going, I'm just sitting here studying, learning a bunch of words. It's totally useless. I need to meditate. Are you getting the idea? This is called dissatisfied mind. Okay? Don't think dissatisfied mind is just, you know, I don't like green, I want blue, you know. Dissatisfied mind is whatever we're doing, it's not the right thing. It's not good enough. It's I should be doing something else. This isn't having any effect. Yeah, that's all just dissatisfied mind.
For each session or what you recommend, if I know that there are certain relationships from the past or things that I'm going to want to focus on, do you think it's a good idea to think about that before a particular session, say, well, this will be my intention in the session, or just let things arise at the beginning?
I think it depends, you know, on you. I wouldn't get too hung up doing psychoanalysis of your relationships, okay? This is a purification retreat, not a psychoanalytic retreat. There may be specific deeds that you've done that you don't feel good about, that you want to focus on purifying those. And that's strongly in your mind before you go in the session, so you keep that in the session. Other times, things may come up in your session. Yeah. It often can be good to, give yourself some different things to contemplate in each session, but if something comes up strongly, go with that. You know, like you might spend a session on killing and stealing and unwise sexual behavior. That one you might need 4 or 5 sessions on. And you're lying. Who knows how many sessions we'll need on that one. Taking intoxicants, that'll keep us busy for a while. So you might have different things that you focus on in each session that you want to purify. Yeah. You go through all the 10 negative actions in that one, or there might be something that just comes to mind that you feel, I really need to purify this. Yeah. Or you might find that you're having some, anger come up at somebody, and then you need to know how to do the thought training practice to release your anger towards that person. So I thought I would give you the oral transmission for the Vajrasattva practice, if somebody would bring me the red book. So the oral transmission involves me reading and you listening. But it's also good if you do a mandala offering at the beginning and also at the end, short.
His crown anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, four lands, sun and moon, imagined as the Buddha land and offered to you. Enjoy this pure land.
Idam
Guratna Mandala Kamniryatayami.
Okay, so this starts out with the power of reliance, taking refuge, and generating the altruistic intention. So visualize about 4 inches above your head an open white lotus upon which is a moon disc. Vajrasattva is seated upon this. His body is made of light and adorned with beautiful ornaments and clothes of celestial silk. His 2 hands are crossed at his heart. The right hand holds a vajra, the left holds a bell. At his heart is a moon disc with the seed syllable HOM at its center and the letters of the Vajrasattva 100-syllable mantra standing clockwise around its edge. Holding this visualization clearly in your mind, contemplate and recite 3 times. I take refuge in the 3 jewels. I will liberate all sentient beings and lead them to enlightenment. Thus I perfectly generate the mind dedicated to attaining enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Spend some time reviewing harmful physical, verbal, and mental actions you have done, both those you can remember and those you created in previous lives but cannot remember. Generate deep regret for having done these. Have a strong wish to be free from their suffering results and to avoid causing harm to others and yourself in the future. Seeing Vajrasattva as a combination of the wisdom and compassion of all the Buddhas and as your own wisdom and compassion in fully developed form, make this request. O Bhagavan Vajrasattva, please clear away all negative karma and obscurations of myself and all living beings and purify all degenerated and broken commitments. And the power of the remedial action. And from the Hung of Vajrasattva's heart, light radiates in all directions, requesting the Buddhas to bestow their blessings. They accept this request and send white rays of light and nectar, the essence of which is the excellent qualities of their body, speech, and mind. The light and nectar absorb into the Hung and the letters of the mantra at Vajrasattva's heart. They then fill his whole body completely, enhancing the magnificence of his appearance and increasing the brilliance of the mantra. While reciting the mantra, visualize that white rays of light and nectar stream continuously from the Hong and Matra at Vajrasattva's heart. They flow down through the crown of your head and fill every cell of your body and mind with infinite bliss. Recite the mantra at least 21 times and more if possible by doing the visualizations explained below. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dita Mebawa Sutakaya Mebawa Supakaya Mebawa Anurata Mebawa Sarva Siddhi Mambaryasa Sarva Kama Sutsame Sitang Shriyankara Hung Aho Bhagawan Sarva Tata Gata Vajra Mami Mutsa Vajra Bawa Ma Samaya Sattva Hum Pe. Our Om Vajrasattva Hum. While reciting either of the mantras, continue to visualize the flow of light and nectar and perform the following four visualizations alternately. So purification of the body. Your disturbing attitudes and negativities in general, and in particular those of the body, take the form of black ink. Sickness takes the form of pus and blood, and afflictions caused by spirits appear in the form of scorpions, snakes, frogs, and crabs. Flushed out by the light and nectar, they all leave your body through the lower openings like filthy liquid flowing from a drain pipe. Feel completely empty of these problems and negativities. They no longer exist anywhere. Purification of speech. Your disturbing attitudes and the imprints of negativities of speech take the form of liquid tar. The light and nectar fill your body as water fills a dirty glass. The negativities, like dirt, rise to the top and flow out through the upper openings of your body, your eyes, ears, mouth, noses, and so forth. Feel completely empty of these problems. They are gone forever. Purification of mind. Your disturbing attitudes and the imprints of mental negativities appear as darkness at your heart. When struck by the forceful stream of light and nectar, the darkness instantly vanishes. It is like turning on a light in a room. The darkness does not go anywhere. It simply ceases to exist. Feel that you are completely empty of all these problems. They are non-existent. While it says problems here, it means negativities, actually. Simultaneous purification. Do the three above visualizations simultaneously. This sweeps away the subtle obscurations that prevent you from seeing correctly all that exists. Feel completely free of these obscurations. And the power of determination. Address Vajrasattva. Through ignorance and delusion, I have broken and degenerated my commitments. O spiritual master, be my protector and refuge. Lord, holder of the Vajra, endowed with great compassion, in you, the foremost of beings, I take refuge. Then make the following determination. I shall do my best not to do these destructive actions again in the future. Vajrasattva is extremely pleased and says, my spiritual child of the essence, all your negativities, obscurations, and degenerated vows have now been completely purified. With delight, Vajrasattva melts into light and dissolves into you. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind. Concentrate on this. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Vajrasattva, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.
This ground anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, four lands, sun and moon, imagined as a Buddha land and offered to you.
Okay. Yes.
What about if I don't believe that it's happening?
purification.
Yeah. So what about if you don't believe that the purification's happening? You fake it. Yeah? You just give yourself some mental space to just, and say to yourself, I wonder what it would feel like if I put this down. I wonder what it would feel like if this were really purified. And then just imagine what it might feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's facing the same way, same direction we are.
Once I heard that you gave the explanation of that there's under yourself an account, a being, I don't know, a very cruelsome being that's looking very cruelty.
A being?
A being, like Lord of Death.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. There's also, if you want to, okay, while you're flushing out all these frogs and scorpions. And by the way, you don't imagine those things inside your body. You just imagine that when the negativities come out, they come out as that. But don't imagine that you're filled with all these snakes and scorpions and stuff, okay? But when what you can add to the visualization is when they come out, the earth opens up, you know, underneath you, and there's the Lord of Death with his big mouth and fangs. And all this negativity just falls into the mouth of the Lord of Death. He loves it. You know, he's just going, Okay. And then at the end, yeah, a double vajra crosses his mouth so he can't burp and spit it all out again. And then he disappears under the earth and the earth closes over.
But this relates to when all this, you know, the imagination of snakes and so on, blood. What about when you fill up the body with this blood and it comes out here?
Oh yeah, you know, you can imagine it coming out here and then going into his mouth too.
And then you close the mouth of the Lord of the Death after you have done all three kinds of...
At the end of the session, his mouth closes. Mm-hmm. And also, when you're doing it, you don't have to do all these visualizations in one session. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can alternate different visualizations. You can do one and two a session, or one or two or three a session. You can stick with one for 15 sessions if you want, because it's really being effective for you. Okay? So again, don't, you know, give yourself some way of being flexible. Yeah? And see what's appealing to you and what you need to do at a certain time. But he disappears at the end of, after your last mantra. Yeah. So it's eat and run. Yeah. He doesn't hang around after that. No, you do the long mantra. Anything else? Okay, then we will dedicate. Yeah. Is this one going to be transcribed, do you know? Because I think this could be helpful for people.
It's in the schedule.
Okay. And I think for the people who aren't here, because we're still missing four people, you know, that it would be helpful that for them to watch this or read this. And partway through the retreat, you might want to actually listen to it again, you know? When you bring all your beans in, and your my mala broke. By the way, leave your mala on your table. Don't walk around with your mala. And you only count the mantra that you say when you're seated, not when you're walking around.
The mala when you're beside the mantra, where you hold, can you hold it
They say hold it up, But it gets really tiring after a while. So if your hand's in your lap, you know, I don't know.
Can I say something? If somebody wants little black beans, I'll put a bowl available so if you want to count your manas, okay?
Yeah, or you can use gravel rocks also, mm-hmm. so we don't waste food. Yeah.
Okay. There'd be good beans afterwards, though.
Oh, blessed beans.
White beans.
Okay, so let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Vajrasattva, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. A couple of things. If you want to stay after a session and finish counting that particular mala and dedicate afterwards, that's perfectly all right. I do advise, though, taking a break between one session and the other, just to get up and walk around, and really try and look long distances. You know, that's why I say get some exercise and, you know, stand out and look all the way across the valley and look this way and look at the stars at night and look at the mountains over there. It really expands your mind and is very, very good for you. Okay? So don't just stay like this during all the break times. Okay?
I'm not sure if I remember. If I only do 60, it doesn't count, right, for my session.
I don't know. You decide.
I have somebody else.
Okay. Good. And tell that person not to ask me. Because then, oh, I did four more than half a mala. Oh, I got to count those extra four. You know, you see what our mind does? We stop being interested in the practice. And we're more interested in, you know, counting.
So why even have a number?
What?
Why even have a number to count to?
Because it gives you, as one teacher said, the opportunity to do one mantra with full concentration and right motivation. Okay? It keeps you there on the seat for a while anyway. You know, but aside from that, just I've said everything I'm going to say about counting. If you want to drive yourself crazy, please do so. Just don't tell me, you know, and don't break down on me over how many mantra you have or haven't. Okay? Yeah. Yes.
Hey, is there somebody in the school who likes to do a 3 years retreat sometimes? Then you have to lie, then you haven't actually done over 100,000.
People can work that out later. Yes.
How about, what do you recommend as far as singing the mantra versus saying it without?
Yeah. When you're doing it, you know, silently, then. I would advise just saying it as quickly as you can without the melody. You may sometimes do it out loud. There's a lot of force and energy when you do it out loud, you know. But then you might do that for, you know, a few minutes during one session, but then most of the time you do it quietly. Make sure, because you're sitting in close proximity to each other, that you're not making any noise. You know, they say to move your lips when you're saying it, but some people move their lips really loudly, and everybody. So you know, so don't do that, okay? The people who click their malas and the people who chant, you know, loudly when they're doing it silently, you can put them in the corner and they can make each other miserable. I'm joking. yeah. So, yeah.
I know you're kind of joking, but on the chance that I might be one of those people or someone else might be, and we don't pass notes, how shall we let whoever, what shall we do?
You give them a dirty look. And then they know that that's what they're doing. Or you take out your mala and you go click, click, click. Or one retreat, you know what we had a problem with? Somebody had a down jacket.
Nylon jacket.
With maybe a down inside. And you get... You tell the story.
Well, it was so long. And it was kind of tight, so he would have trouble getting it off. And I mean, it just stopped the whole room. It was just, it was like saran or tin foil or something. You know?
Yeah. Because he would unzip it in the middle of the session, and then, you know, it crinkles going off, and then he would get cold, so he'd put it back on, and it crinkled again. Yeah. So if you're having hot flashes, use something that doesn't crinkle, okay? Also, please do not create an empire at your meditation seat. You know, you need your long rim outline, your text, your mala, maybe a package of tissues if you, you know, need to blow your nose. Do not have water. I'm sure you can go for an hour and a quarter without drinking something. Do not have tea. Do not have chocolate. Okay. You might have some cough drops somewhere in the room because sometimes people get this coughing thing and then you can pass them to that person. If you're sucking a cough drop, you don't count any of your mantra at that time, and suck it quietly. Yeah. Instead of taking the paper. Okay. What else? Yeah.
What about the prayer of multiplying?
Yes, we do that at the beginning of the day.
At the beginning?
Yeah.
And not in the other sessions?
No.
Mm-hmm. In case of the Spanish speaker, when it's our turn to read it out loud, can we read it in Spanish?
Oh, sure, that's fine. Okay. Yeah. One retreat, we had people doing the praises to Tara in Spanish at breakfast time. Yeah, so, yeah, feel free to do it in Spanish.
Oh, well, I didn't
know this. Okay.
I heard that then we have to leave the room, then we stay outside.
Yeah, you don't come back in because it's really disturbing to people. And also try not to step over each other's seats. And definitely don't spill somebody's beans. And also, you don't need 1,000 beans in order to count. You know, you just have 10 and you move your 10 over here and then you make some other way to, you know, make a mark when you complete that 10. Also, no reading of Dharma texts in the session, no writing journals, okay? Yeah, just do your session. If you really can't concentrate, open your eyes, put your knees up, and look into space and see whoever else is sitting there who's doing the same, but don't laugh.
If the Dharma outline I have is your book, I won't read the rest of the book, but I'll read that specific.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if it's in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask a question about succession of rulers? Mm-hmm. Okay to not the
commentary in the sadhana about to help generate some of the visualizations. Is there a way to read that other than?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about some people, you know, just take out some other book and read it in the session. Yeah, read if your sadhana has commentary verses between it, then read those commentary verses. But don't take out a separate book that's a commentary and read it during the session. Study, do that kind of study and reading in the break time. Okay.